We're beginning our learning of Masechet Makot, Tractate Makot. Traditionally, Masechet Makot is often learned in 8th grade, traditionally, in the last half a century. It's a nice Masechet to teach youngsters in that it has a small amount of Haggadah, and it has a lot of basic concepts. Masechet Makot is also a Masechet which can be relatively easily mastered. As you see, it doesn't have many pages. And they print it in its own tractate. You guys are each using a big volume, but you should know you could get it. A little thin pamphlet, all of Masechet Makot. Masechet Makot is really divided into the first chapter and the last two. It is all of 23 pages. Chav Dalet Dapim. So this volume has many commentaries in Sanhedrin and Shavuot, but your volume only has Makos and Shavuot. But at any rate, it's a relatively short and easy Masechet to master. Now, our Gemara is going to focus on a concept taught in the Torah called Edim Zomemin. Zomem means to plot. Edim Zomemin are witnesses who testified falsely. And then, after the court reached a gmar din, reached a decision, in walks a second pair of witnesses and say, you were with us at the time you claim you saw this event. Notice, they aren't saying, we have testimony that contradicts what you said, directly. We're not saying that it didn't happen. We're just saying, at the time you claimed it happened, you were with us. That's called Edim Zomemin. And the Talmud tells us in Baba Basra, an important concept in Sanhedrin, with regard to Edim Zomemim. Edim Zomemim, the Talmud points out, is a chidush. Technically, the Torah says you believe the second set of witnesses. The second set of witnesses walk in and say, you were with us at that time. And the Torah says, being that that occurs, you give the first pair of witnesses the punishment that they were plotting on giving this fellow. So Edim Zomemim could get the death penalty. If they testified that someone did something that is deserving of the death penalty, and then they become Edim Zomemim, remember, in order to become Edim Zomemim, it has to happen after the Gemar Din, after the courts came to a conclusion. Then the Torah says, Va'asisem lo, do unto him, each of the witnesses, Kasher Zomam la'asos la'achiv, as he plotted to do unto his brethren. Now, who told you that the second pair of witnesses are more trustworthy than the first? That's a chiddush that the Torah tells us. Ordinarily, if you have edim ha-makhishim, edim that are contradictory, then the halacha is, we say, I don't know who to believe. Both of you go home. Let's say the witnesses were to come in and say, how could you testify that Jack killed Joe on Sunday afternoon? Jack was at the ball game with us on Sunday afternoon. He couldn't have killed him. So they're contradicting them, but they're not saying you, the witnesses, were with us. That's not called edim zomemim. Then it's edim makhishim, contradictory. Then the courts say, we don't know who to believe. Let's say they would say, the person you're saying was murdered was with us at that time. That's also edim makhishim. The only time there are edim zomemin is when they say this, imanu eitem, you were with us at a such and such a place at this time. And our first chapter focuses on the laws of edim zomemin. That is our first chapter. The second and third chapter focus on the laws of makos, really, of giving lashes. And our Mishnah is coming off of a Mishnah at the end of Sanhedrin. At the end of Sanhedrin, the Gemara says, the Mishnah over there says, that ordinarily Edim Zomimim get the same thing they were planning on giving the person they were testifying against. So far we're together, we understand what Edim Zomimim are. Yeah, Mr. Zabriskie, yeah, Reuven. We know Edim Zomemin. Okay, good. Yes, Yehuda.
If the second witnesses come before the judgment is rendered on the witness,
then they would not get Kasher Zomem. Then we would nullify the testimony, but they would not get Kasher Zomem. They would not. Kasher Zomem means what they were plotting to do. That's the way the pasuk terms it.
But even though they were plotting it before it actually came to fruition.
Right. And it's a special halacha. Technically, we don't understand it. We don't have logic. This is a hoax.
Right.
Torah says this is what you do. So, if they would come after he was executed, they also wouldn't get Kasher Zomem.
All right.
Only at that specific time.
Only
during the testimony?
Only after the testimony and after the courts reached a gemar din. They reached a conclusion, but did not execute it. Right.
So it might be people might, if witnesses know that they're lying, they might purposely wait until after
the testimony. The Gemara discusses that let's say the defendant knows that they're lying and he has witnesses. And he says, I'm not going to bring them in now, I'm going to wait. Right? The Gemara discusses that. Not here in Sanhedrin.
Oh, wow.
Right? Right. Well, if they're lying, then they have to take into account that could happen to them, right? But you have to remember that if he waits till after the Gemara Din, he's risking his life in order to hurt them. It's not too smart a thing to do. You know, maybe the courts won't accept the Edim HaMezimim for whatever reason. Maybe the courts will find fault in them. He better get his act together. It's a pretty risky business in order to take them down. Okay, so the Mishnah at the end of Sanhedrin discusses that ordinarily, Edim Zomimim get whatever they're planning on giving the defendant. The only instance where that doesn't happen is a special case where there's a daughter of a Kohen, Bas Kohen, and they testify that when she was engaged, not what we call engagement today, but rather what's called Kiddushin Erusin in the term of the Gemara, and they testify that during that period, she was unfaithful to her husband. She went and she had relations with another man. So then ordinarily, if any other girl, except for the daughter of a Kohen, would be unfaithful after the Kiddushin, she gets the death penalty of Chenek. The daughter of a Kohen, the Torah gives a special din that she gets Sreifa. She gets executed, what's called Sreifa, burning, but doesn't literally mean burning. It was a way of executing her with molten lead. yeah.
How long is usually from the judgment to the time? Oh, wow,
Shukach, Toda Rabah. So the judgment, the way the Gemara says, is anytime there's a death penalty, the courts, after they reach a conclusion, they have to wait till the next day. Maybe they'll figure out another angle to absolve the person. They can't execute him the day they reach that conclusion. They have to sleep on it and see if they can find another angle to free him.
There's appeals and stuff like that.
Yeah, after all the appeals. After they've reached their conclusion, then they have to wait another night because maybe they'll change their mind. And only the next day do they come to the conclusion. And once they come to that conclusion, the next day they have to execute right away. So it's not to torture the guy where he's waiting on death row. Halacha says that's torture. It's a biblical mitzvah. Torah says you're not allowed to torture a guy, leaving him in a state where he knows you're going to kill him, but you're not going to kill him. So long as you're deliberating and he has hope, fine. But the second...
Is that allowed to avoid?
So that's a separate discussion. Let's stick here. So the Torah says that Bas Ish Kohen Ki Techel Liznot, the daughter of a Kohen, we hold to a higher standard, and therefore her death penalty is more harsh. Mm-hmm. Tells us the Mishnah in the end of Sanhedrin, assuming these witnesses' testimony were accepted, she would get Sreifa, and what would the guy who committed adultery get? He would get chenek, because he is still a regular Jew. Chenek is strangulation. So the Mishnah over there says, now what happens if they testify that she and he committed adultery after engagement, and then after the courts reach their conclusion, they become Edim Zomimin. So which death penalty do you give them? Do you give them the death penalty they were planning on giving her, which is Sreifa, or do you give them the death penalty they were planning on giving him, which is chenek? So on that, it says over there you don't give them exactly what they were plotting. You don't give them the harsher death penalty, but rather you give them the death penalty of chenek. And then, coming off of that Mishnah, our Mishnah says, how do you do Edim Zomimin? We understand that Edim Zomimin, part of the concept is they have to get the punishment they're planning on giving. Now there are going to be instances where that's impossible. Let's say they testify that a Kohen is a disqualified Kohen, right? But they're not Kohanim. So what are you going to do to them? You can't say now you'll be disqualified Kohanim. They never were Kohanim to begin with. And in other case...
You're saying they're trying to disqualify a Kohen?
Correct.
That's the Edim Zomimin.
So, right. So I'm saying our Mishnah is going to focus on that case. That they walk into court and they say, that Kohen, you've been giving him Truma, you've been letting him go to do Birchas Kohanim, you've been doing everything for him. He's disqualified. His father married a divorcee. He is a Ben Grusha. Or his father married a woman after Chalitza. After she did the procession, if her husband, her first husband died, and then she takes off the shoe with the spitting, so that rabbinically was prohibited. The rabbis included that like a ben grusha. So they walk into court and they say, he's a ben chalutza. In other words, they're saying he is a cholo. He is a disqualified kohen, he no longer deserves the honors of a kohen. So on that, the Mishnah says you can't really give them what they were planning on giving the defendant. So the Mishnah says you give them lashes instead. Now, I explained to you the whole Mishnah the way the Gemara at the end will explain the Mishnah. We'll read the Mishnah and understand it also with the initial understanding. Yes, sir?
Why is the son of the Kohen who committed the crime, why is he suffering the punishment of not being...
It's an excellent question. The Shlomo Melch asked that question in Ecclesiastes. He said, how could that be? Why is the son of a woman who drank alcohol or took drugs during pregnancy... Why is that child suffering? The poor kid, he didn't do anything. His mother caused him to have all the birth defects. So just like physically we could inflict on a person birth defects where it's not his fault, so too spiritually we have the capacity to do that.
And the Kohen, he's immediately disqualified? After
no, the man who did it is not disqualified. Only his children are. He's still a kosher Kohen. Keeps going.
So that's just the end of the Kohen line ends just with... Wait.
He's still a Kohen, he's just a Kohen Chalal. In many respects, he loses the honors of a Kohen. Not in every respect, in many respects. That's just the case we're talking about. So let's see our Mishnah. Now that we have the introduction, guys, those who are listening to the recording, don't answer Amen on a recorded blessing. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam
she'hakol nehyeh b'ro. Supposed to mention it. You're not supposed to say amen unless you're present at the time of that blessing.
Or if you hear it by phone and it's live. So the Mishnah, and the simple reading of the Mishnah is, how do witnesses become Edim Zomimin? We already explained that the Gemara is going to explain that the real question is, how do they become Edim Zomimin where you cannot inflict onto them what they were planning on giving the other guy? But that's not the simple reading of the Mishnah. The simple reading of the Mishnah is Keitzad, which is short for Ke'ezet Tzad. How? We had different ways of understanding. Keitzad Ha'edim Nasim Zomimin. How do witnesses become Edim Zomimin? So the Mishnah gives an example. If the witnesses testify and say, Medina Nubish Ploni, we testify against so-and-so. Shu ben Girusha o ben Chalutza, that he is the son of a divorcee or the son of a woman who had the shoe removal procession done with her, a Chalutza, a woman who did Chalitza. So in such an instance, says the Mishnah, Ein omerim, we do not say, Yaseh zev ben grusha o ben chalutza tachtav, this witness should become a cholol. We say, oh, you wanted him to be considered like he's the son of a grusha. From now on, you're going to be considered the son of a grusha. You're going to be the son of a chalutza. Even if the witnesses were kohanim, we don't do that. Ela, but rather, what do? Lokeh arbeim. The witnesses get 40 lashes. Medina nubish ploni shu chayav liglot. If they testify against so and so, that he must go into exile. He murdered by mistake. Or, we don't know, we didn't see the actual murder, but we were in court. When the courts accepted other witnesses who said he murdered by mistake, and they said he has to go to exile. However it is, we're coming here and we're testifying he must go into exile. We don't say, now the witnesses, they wanted him to go into exile, they'll go into exile. No, says the Mishnah, Ela lokeh arbeim, but rather they get 40 lashes. Says the Gemara, ha, this Mishnah should begin with a different introduction. The Mishnah should have began by saying, how do witnesses not become Edim Zomimin? Because this isn't classical Zomimin. Classical Zomimin, they say, why are they called Edim Zomimin? Edim who plotted? Because they get what they plotted. The Mishnah said, how do Edim get what they plotted? Here, I'll tell you two cases where they don't get what they plotted. Well, what are you saying? What does the Mishnah begin by saying, how do witnesses become witnesses who plot, meaning who get what they plotted? And then gives us a case, which is not that way. Then I have another question. Midiktani lekaman. Later on, the Mishnah is going to spell out a classical case of Edim Zomimin. Later on, the Mishnah is going to say, you want to know Edim Zomimin? I'll tell you. If they say the one who murdered was with us at that time, that's not Zomimin. If they say the one who got murdered was with us at that time. That's not Zomimin. Aval, says the Mishnah, but Amru Lahim, if the second set of witnesses say to the first set of witnesses, Hechatem Meidim, how are you giving testimony? Sharei Boto Ayom Atem Ayitem Imanu, but on that day you were with us, Bimakom Ploni, in a different place, in such and such a place, you weren't there to see the crime. Harei Elu Zomimin. So the Mishnah says, these are Eidim Zomimin. So what's our Mishnah beginning by saying, what's the case of Eidim Zomimin? What do you mean? You're going to explain to me in two Mishnayos down. And anyways, the case you gave me doesn't match the question you began with. So those are the two questions the Gemara asks. So the Gemara says, Tana Hosamkoi. Our Tana was picking up where he left off at the end of Sanhedrin. Remember, we said in our introduction that in the end of Sanhedrin, we have that Mishnah about when do Eidim Zomimin not get what they were plotting. Yeah, who remembers? Tell us, Aaron Price. What was the Mishnah? The Mishnah at the end of Sanhedrin was? Who remembers? You, to help us out. Sorry, I didn't mean to disturb you. Read Rashi, it's a good idea. Go ahead.
It was saying, Eden Zomimin talking about the Bas Kohen.
Excellent, yeah.
And when they testify against her, How do they get punished? Do they get punished like a foreign one or like a regular person? And also in the case of
That was the case. Okay. So the Mishnah at the end of Sanhedrin says we have a case of Eidim Zomimin that do not get what they were plotting exactly because they were going to give her the death penalty of Sreifa. They were going to give him Chenek. They get Chenek. And then coming off of that Mishnah, we have our Mishnah, and the Gemara is going to explain how that works, how that answers all the questions.
Because the question is, they didn't get exactly what they were trying to give on others, but there's two different things, so how could you give two different things anyway?
Right, but then we would say, being that Sreifa is a harsher punishment, give the harsher one, because we have a rule, Yesh Bichlal Matai Maneh. 200 includes 100. If I asked you, do you have 100 shekel? You say, no, I don't, because you have 200, right? Well, we say, no, that's a lie. 200 includes 100. So if you give him the harsher death penalty, technically you've encompassed both. Wow. You're right, I can't kill him twice. Remind me, at the end of our learning, to tell you the story about Avner, and how he did get all four death penalties.
Why is Sreifa?
He did it to himself. He wanted. No. He did it to himself. He went out on a boat and figured out a way. He was a man who converted and became a Christian monk, a disciple of the Ramban. Okay, now we got you all curious. Just one second. What's the story? Yeah. The Ramban had a disciple, Avner, who went and became Ramban, Nachmanides, went and became Christian monk. One Yom Kippur day, he sends for the Ramban, calls him into his chambers, and says, I want you to know, because of you, I became Christian. So Ramban says, how so? He says, because when you taught us Ha'azinu, you said every Jew is mentioned in Ha'azinu, and I think that's ridiculous. Once you told us that, so I left. So he said, I'll prove to you. Tell me, where's my name appear in Ha'azinu? So the Ramban went into a corner in Davin, and then Hashem revealed his eyes, and he quoted the Pasuk that says, Amarti afehem ashbita me'enosh zichram. Amarti afehem. So afehem, the third letter is Aleph. Ashbita, the third letter is Beis. Me'enosh, the third letter is Nun. Zichram, the third letter is Reish. The Pasuk says, I've said I will destroy them and remove them from any commemoration in humanity. That's a Pasuk that describes when the Jews sin, Hashem swears how I will punish them. So the Ramban says, that's your name, Avner. Third letter of each one. And when Avner saw that, he wanted to do tshuva desperately. And here there are two different versions to the end of the story. One version, which, if I'm not mistaken, is quoted by the Drashus Rabbi Yeshua Ibn Shu'ib, the disciple of the Rashba, who was a disciple of the Ramban. So you're talking about just like one generation later. He quotes, if I'm not mistaken, that Avner went out on a boat and figured out, he set up a contraption that he would get all four types of death penalties on the boat. A way of hanging himself, and then at the same time a sword would come. He set up this complicated contraption. I don't know how he did it. I don't know.
My question was, why is burning considered more severe than the strangulation?
Good question. Join us for Daf Yomi in Sanhedrin. There's a whole chapter that discusses it.
I mean, just think about it. Burning led down the throat compared to the strangulation. I don't know,
but
there's a lot of things that are not necessarily logical, though. Like you said,
right. So, at any rate, the Mishnah over there says, our Tana, the one who quoted our Mishnah, he's going on over there. Hasam is over there. Koi, that's what he's going on. He's going on the Mishnah over there, meaning Makos is arranged in the Shas after Sanhedrin, and our Tana is picking up where he left off at the end of Sanhedrin. It says in the Mishnah in the end of Sanhedrin, Kol hazomimin makdimin lo tamitam. All witnesses, they can anticipate that they will get the same death penalty that they were plotting to give the defendant. Chutz mizomimei bat kohen uvala, except for Edom Zomimin who testified about the daughter of a kohen and the man she committed adultery with. Bo'el literally means to have intimate relations. Bo'ala means the one who had intimate relations with her. She'en makdimin lo tamita, that they don't get advanced to that death penalty that they wanted to give her, ela limita acheret, but rather to another death penalty. Now, this has dual importance. On the surface, the importance is that they don't get the same exact death penalty they were planning on giving. But on a deeper level, it has greater importance because we have a rule that says that all testimony must be worthy of becoming Edim Zomimin. If there is testimony that could not become Edim Zomimin, we wouldn't accept it. Let's say the witnesses say, I saw him murder, but I'm not sure what day it was. So then we wouldn't accept them, because we'd say, you guys could never become Edim Zomimin. You have to, you want to say something bad about him, you got to risk yourself for it. You got to put yourself in a situation where you could become Edim Zomimin. Later on in the tractate, we'll see that. So here, if we would say these witnesses who are testifying about this girl, we're not going to give them what they want to give her because they also want to give him. We're not going to give them what they want to give him because they also want to give her. Then we would never be able to accept such testimony. We have a rule that we will not accept testimony that cannot become Edim Zomin. That's called Edut, testimony, She'iyata Yechol Azima, that you cannot come as Edim HaMezimim, Edim who testify against them and say, you were with us at that time. Such testimony is not acceptable in court. We'll see. It's a derivation later on in the tractate.
Yes, because in order to become Edim Zomim, then people have to say, you were with us at this time.
Exactly. Right. So we'll see other examples. There are other examples of Edut She'ata Yechol Azima, testimony that cannot become Edim Zomim. I just gave the simplest example. So the Mishnah over there says, these witnesses get the lighter death penalty, and that's considered that they got Kashil Zammam as they plotted, even though technically you all pointed out, wait a second, they plotted more than that. Nonetheless, they do get the lighter death penalty, and that's called that we fulfilled Kashil Zammam. The Yesh Edim Zomimin, and here this is the juncture to our Mishnah. That our Mishnah, when you're learning Shas Mishnayis, comes up after that Mishnah. And then our Mishnah is coming with the following understood introduction. The Yesh Edim Zomimin Acherim, and there are a different type of witnesses who are caught to be Edim Zomimin, She'en Osin Ben Din HaZamah Kol Ikar, that in that case you don't give them what they were plotting at all. Meaning in the two cases in our Mishnah, they were planning on making him a halal, they were planning on making him live in exile. You're not doing that to them. You're giving them lashes, so technically you're not giving them what they were plotting at all. Ela malkot arba'im, but rather you give them 40 lashes. Keitzad, how so? And that's our Mishnah. Keitzad ha'edim nasim zomimim isn't to be read the way we read the Mishnah. How do you make these witnesses into witnesses that are edim zomimim? That's not the topic of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is saying, Keitzad ha'edim, how are witnesses who give testimony about something that you cannot give back onto them, how do you fulfill in them giving them what they were plotting? So there, in that case, we say we give them lashes. And we'll have to discuss how do you do that? Who gave you the right to give them lashes? Maybe you shouldn't accept such testimony. So the Gemara is going to give a special derivation that lashes comes in instances where you cannot give them what they were plotting. And in a minute, the Gemara is going to discuss why can't you. So that's where our Mishnah picks up. When our Mishnah says, Keitzad ha'edim nasim zomimin, our Mishnah doesn't mean in a classical case, how do witnesses become witnesses edim zomin. Our Mishnah is picking up off of the last Mishnah. The last Mishnah gave me a case where they're testifying against the daughter of a kohen, and they won't get exactly what they were planning on giving her, and yet they're called edim zomimin. Our Mishnah says, and how do edim, in other instances where you can't give them a like punishment, how do they become nasim zomimin? And about that our Mishnah says, You give them lashes for ketzad ha'asomi dina nubish blanishu ben grusha ben chalutza. If they testify about so and so that he is the son of a grusha or the son of a chalutza, enomerim yaseze ben grusha ben chalutza tachtav. We don't say this witness should become a son of a grusha or a son of a chalutza instead of him. Ela loket arbeim, but rather he gets 40 lashes. So we basically understood this. We began even before the Mishnah. We explained all this. So pretty simple, right? Our Mishnah taught us the concept. If a witness cannot get kasher zomam as he was plotting to give on to the defendant, then in such an instance you give him 40 lashes. Now our Gemara is going to pick up and say, okay, wait a second, why really can't you give him what he was plotting? Minahani mili. So the Gemara says, what's the source for this concept that you're not going to pay him back what he was plotting on doing on to others? Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and we know him. He is the one that tricked Malchamavis and went alive into the Garden of Eden. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi taught, Damalcha, the pasuk says, Vasitim lo kasher zamam, do unto that witness, do unto him as he was plotting. So we understand the law, the lo lezaho. You do unto him and not unto his children. So you can't make him into a halal, even if the witnesses would be kohanim. You can't disqualify them and then disqualify all the generations afterwards from kehuna. The pasuk says, do unto him as he was plotting. We understand that to mean him and not his children. So the Gemara asks the obvious question, so disqualify him and not his kids. Okay, you can't punish his kids. Fine, you can't punish other generations over his sin. Fine, but so disqualify him. Why do you give him lashes? Says the Gemara, we have to pay him back in accordance with what he was plotting. He was plotting on disqualifying this guy and all future generations that come from him. If you're only going to disqualify them, you didn't fulfill as he was plotting anyways. In a situation where you can't fulfill what he was plotting, so then you have this code, give him 40 lashes. Now the 40 lashes was serious business. We'll see in the next two chapters. People were at a risk of dying. They'd have a medical team there to check the guy out before the lashes. How many lashes could he handle without dropping dead? Mm. It was no fun, these lashes. I mean, people would sometimes relieve themselves. They'd lose control of their bodily functions as a result of the lashes. Yes?
How did the lineage carry over, meaning that if someone was disqualified, how when it got to two or three generations more, how could that person just say, well, I'm a Kohen? Like, was there records? Because those people who had made the decree would have been deceased at that point. So how does that
it's
work?
Not a decree, it's a biblical din, chalal. This what concept that a kohen, chalal is a kohen that's been, chalal comes from the word chulin. Chalal means he's been demoted to standard, to regular, to Yisrael. Okay. So a chalal is a biblical concept. If a kohen marries a grusha, he's committing a biblical obligation every day that he's living with her. Okay. People mess up on that. People, sometimes I saw an article, a guy says, he loved her so much, he said, I'll forgo the kahuna for my kids, and I'll marry her. That's ridiculous. It's a biblical obligation every day he's married her. It's not like he has an option to choose. He has this holiness, and he's forbidden. The Torah says he can't marry her.
And you're saying that if he does it,
The children are disqualified kohanim, they're halalim. Now, there are certain halachos, they're not completely, they don't lose everything when it comes to the kahuna, they lose most of the rights of the kahuna. Not everything. They're called a kohen halal. A kohen who's been desecrated, so to speak, he's been lowered to...
Wouldn't he rather just be thrown into the, you know, like the Israel place and not have to have him there?
Fine. What can you do?
There's a guy in our open class that said that he's a kohen.
Sure. In today's day and age, it's very common because a lot of people who are non-observant, so they marry a non-observant girl. Now, if this girl, she's been having intimate relations with all kinds of people, if she's been if she had relations with a non-Jew, so then she becomes a zona, that's what's biblically called a zona, and then she's also biblically prohibited on the kohen. And if the kohen marries her, which is what often happens, so then he disqualifies his children.
Exactly.
And
does he have to take that title? Can't he just throw it and say, I'm Yisrael?
I don't think so. But he'll have to ask his right. He'll have to ask his local Orthodox rabbi how he could get around publicizing it. Right.
Because does he do aliyah and stuff?
He can't get an aliyah like a kohen. No. No. But you don't have to. But don't embarrass him publicly. Yeah.
So if a kohen becomes a halal, his kids that he had before are still.
Correct.
But if he, so let's say now he's got two wives. One of them's kosher and the other one's not. And he's having more children after he's become a halal with a kosher wife. Is those, are those children also disqualified?
Nope.
No. Just the ones with the
wife. No, because he, it's a very interesting halacha. That's what the Gemara is going to say in a few lines. Hamichalel, the one who disqualifies his seed, his children, ain't mitchalel. He doesn't become disqualified. His children, he's disqualifying them because they're born from an illegitimate relationship. It's just like a guy who commits adultery. The children from that relationship are going to be mamzerim. He has a big sin in heaven, but he's still a kosher Jew. His children won't be able to marry a regular Jew because they're the product of adultery. They're mamzerim. They're what's called bastards in English. But he can still marry a kosher woman.
Talking about in the Gemara that you can't, the children can't be punished because of the father.
Right.
But there is a concept where the children are punished because of the father, isn't there? Is that only because it's from the Shemaim or something? Or?
You're talking about this or you're talking about punished?
Like, I think it's similar as do this then to the third and fourth generation.
Right.
Be some kind of
punishment. So the Gemara says the only instance where children are punished from heaven for what their parents do is if they keep it up. Meaning if the father did a sin and the children continue that sin, then God says, I'll punish you for what you did and what your father did. But if the children don't keep up what their parents did, then the Gemara says, no such concept in heaven.
And this only applies like with Jewish people, like if you're a bastard and you're a boy.
I just want to modify that. After the child is an adult. If the child, it seems 13. The custom to say the blessing, Baruch Shepterani Monsho Shel Zeh, blesses the one who absolved me from this one's punishment. That's a blessing that ordinarily people make when their child becomes Bar Mitzvah. So in the Medrash, it's quoted that this blessing, one opinion says the child says it. He says, now I will no longer get punished for my father's sins. That's what he's saying. Thank God, I'm an adult, I'm my own man. Right? So that's it seems like it's 13, even though technically you're right. If it's punishments from above, it should be 20, right? It's a good point. Yeah.
Like I said, does this apply also? Does this apply to Goyim also? I'm saying, like, if you're a bastard, does that mean anything? If this is only strictly for the, like, Jewish people, like, if you're a bastard and a mumzer, if that's like the lowest level for like a Jew, then like would a mumzer as a goy like have like absolutely no contact at all?
I want to look it up. I don't think it's relevant, but I want to look it up.
You said that if they're halal, if the Kohen married someone who had relations with a goy, that also with a Jew?
Not every Jew. If it was just two bachelors living together, then not. No, it has to be someone that's prohibited.
I have a question also on Grusha.
Meaning a woman and a man who are single, technically, that's prohibited.
Right.
But, it goes into a more complicated concept. Which prohibitions she has to have undergone in order for her to get the title of a zona. That's
can she remove that title?
Not as far as I know.
No.
Yeah.
What is a Grusha?
A woman who's the divorcee.
Right, what's the difference between a grusha and a chalutza?
Chalutza is a woman whose husband died, and then he died without kids, and his brother didn't want to marry her, so they removed the shoe, and then she spat
so
in the shoe.
A widow is mutar for a kohen to marry?
Correct. Only a kohen gadol is prohibited from marrying a widow.
Only a kohen gadol. And also, there's one line here after it says, Amar Rav Yoshua ben Levi, it says in brackets, Amarish ben Lakish.
Right.
What is that addition?
I don't know.
It's like if she's a zona though, the question is that there's a concept we can make tshuva though. So why is she unable to remove that title when she makes full repentance?
It's a good question for Thursday night. Let's move forward. So sorry, we can't go on too many tangents. So we said, how do we know what's the source for this concept in the Mishnah that we don't give them what they were plotting? Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, the Omar Krof, what the verse says, Vasitim lo kasher zamam, do unto him as he was plotting. We understand that to mean lo, do unto him, velo lezaro, and not unto his children. So the Gemara asked, v'lifselu ledidei v'lo lifselu lezarei, so disqualify him, and don't disqualify his kids, his seed. Answers the Gemara, Ba'inan kasher zamam na'asot, we need to pay him back as he was plotting to do, and he was plotting on disqualifying the guy and the next generations, Vileko, and then you don't have that, you're not in fulfillment of that, if you'll only make him into zama, into a halal, and not his children. The Gemara, so the first answer was, we have to pay him back, him and not his seed. If we do only him and not his seed, then you haven't fulfilled paying him back. So that's the Gemara's answer. So therefore, you cannot fulfill Kasher Zamam. What do? You give him Makos. Yes?
Wouldn't killing someone also be punishing his seed? Or that not be the
same? That's a derivative. It's not a direct punishment. Second degree, right?
Second degree.
Yeah. Barpada said, remind me once, we could discuss that on a spiritual level, how that works. That's a separate discussion. How does it work in Shemaim? Because in Shemaim they do take accountability for second and third degree, right? For an umpteenth degree. Barpada Omar, the son of Pada, he said, there was an Amora, I guess he didn't get smicha, or for whatever reason he's not mentioned by name, but rather the son of Pada, he says, you want to know why in our Mishnah you can't give them what they were plotting to do? I'll tell you why. A different reason. So the first reason stood. Rabbi Shua ben Levi's reason stood. Now Bar Pada wants to offer a different reason. Kal v'chomer, we have a 40 ori. You guys know what a kal v'chomer is, right?
All the more so.
Yeah, all the more so, yeah. Uma michalel, eino mitchalel. If a Kohen who himself did the action, he married a divorcee, or he married a zona. He did it to his kids. And his kids are going to be halalim. They are going to be disqualified kohanim. And yet, he didn't get disqualified by that action. Uma michalela. What if the person who disqualified his children, eino mitchalel, doesn't get disqualified himself? Habale chalel velo chilel. These witnesses, these edim zomimin, who only plotted to disqualify someone, but they didn't succeed completely, eino din shelo yitchalel. Wouldn't you say definitely they should not get disqualified? If a parent who disqualifies his children doesn't get disqualified, then certainly witnesses who only attempted to disqualify someone shouldn't get disqualified. Just one second, the Gemara is going to knock that out. Matkiv la Ravina. Rabbi Avina asks a tough question. Matkiv, he attacks. Im kein, if so, if that's the logic, that you're going to start saying such a fortiori, then you could do away with the whole concept of Edim Zomimin. Just do away with the concept with this Kal v'chomer. Because we'll say like this. If witnesses walk in and testify that he desecrated Shabbos, we warned him and he did it anyways. The guy gets a death penalty of stoning, right? Skila, yeah. Uma sokel. And what if someone who caused someone else to get stoning? Eino niskal. And then after the guy is lying under a pile of stones, poor Charlie's dead, in come in witnesses and say, wait, stop the case. We ask them, what do you want? They say, those witnesses who testified, they were with us in Honolulu when they say they saw it happen. We say, you should have come here 10 minutes earlier. Do we give those witnesses stoning? No. We said it's a special chiddush. The Torah tells us that in a case of Edom Zomin, with all these details, then you give them what they were plotting. So we'd say the following 40 ori. We'll get to you in a second, Baruch, Yisrael Baruch, the Chasen. Uma hasokel, eino niskal. If you're going to say such a logic, then take it one step further. If someone who stoned someone else doesn't get stoning, someone who only plotted on stoning, but wasn't successful in stoning. The Edim Zomimin, a classical case of Edim Zomimin. They walked in 10 minutes before you stoned him. Don't you say, oh, definitely they shouldn't get stoned. You know, if you're not going to stone the guy who did it, so don't stone the guy who almost did it, right? So obviously you see from the concept that the Torah told us, you do stone the guy who almost did it. The Torah was coming to abort this logic. Don't retry, just delete. Right? No such logic. This logic is exactly what the Torah is coming to tell us against. Don't say such a logic. That's the whole concept of Edom Zomin.
What's the first part of the
Kalama? So he suggested to say, if a person who actually lived with a grusha, a kohen who actually did the aveira, umah michalel, the one who desecrated his children, eino michalel, doesn't desecrate himself in that action, habalichalel, these witnesses who came with the intent to desecrate, velochilel, and they were unsuccessful, they became edim zomin, so they never succeeded in making this guy into a chalal, eino din shlois chalal, don't you say definitely they shouldn't become chalalim? That was his logic. So that Ravina says, no, the whole concept of Edom Zomin precludes from that logic. Because if you use such a logic, then you should never punish Edom Zomin. Yeah? Elo, but rather, Machvarta, the white and clear answer. Machvarta literally means what's white, but it means what's clear. The correct answer is Kiddush Haninon, as we answered Meikara originally. Our first answer, which was the answer of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that it is a verse derivative. The Pasuk says, do unto him, not unto his seed. You can't make him into Chalal and his children, because that the Torah doesn't entitle you to do. You can't make only him into Chalal, because then you're not fulfilling Kasher Zomam, as he was plotting. And therefore, you cannot fulfill the verse of doing as he was plotting, but rather, you must give him lashes. That's the formula that our Mishnah teaches us. In an instance where you cannot fulfill Kasher Zomam, you have to give Makos. That's our Mishnah, that's the first Mishnah. Now we're understanding why it's in Tractate Makos. It's telling me a certain instance in which Makos is the solution. Yes?
The question is, it's a mitzvah if we don't, to break up a relationship between a goy and a Jew, right? That's like, we're not supposed to allow assimilation, it's not a big deal. So if a Kohen is about to marry a Grusha or a Zonah, why is no one saying, like, your children, like, why is no one preventing?
We do say, not only we say it, but it's prohibited on a rabbi to officiate such a wedding.
So how does it go through then, if he's a Kohen?
I don't know. You know, maybe the rabbi doesn't know he's a Kohen. I was once in a hick town where they brought in a rabbi to organize gittin, divorce contracts.
Right?
And they wanted me to be the witness on the divorce contract. So these were couples who were separated already for a decade. They didn't live an orthodox lifestyle. And this rabbi was just coming to do them a favor that when they remarry, or when they have children without remarrying, their children won't be bastards. They won't be mamzerim. So they asked me to be witness. So they're bringing these couples. Sometimes they'd fly in, like this one from the East Coast, this one from the West Coast. They meet halfway just to do this favor that the children the woman would have in the future wouldn't be mamzerim. Fine, so I'm sitting there as a witness, and I'm signing, and one get, and another get, and I was a youngster then, but I was learning, I was in yeshiva, I was in high school, so I started asking the men questions, and one of the questions I asked, which I was a little bit surprised the rabbi didn't ask, it's customary that we ask the person, are you a Kohen or not? And if he's a Kohen, then we have a special minog, how we do the get. We try to make it take a little bit longer, because Kohanim ordinarily have a short fuse, and a Kohen could never remarry his wife when he divorces her. So we make the get take longer to give him more time to regret it. And I saw that the rabbi wasn't asking them any of this. So I'm a youngster, I got nothing to lose, so I asked. and it turned out one of them was a Kohen, or at least said he was. His name was Christopher. Christopher Cohen. Yeah, that was his name. So his last name wasn't Cohen. I mean, this was after the whole get was written up. The rabbi wasn't too pleased, but you can see an instance where the rabbi flew in and he has to deal with a bunch of couples and deal with all the things they need and all the legalities and he didn't get a chance. The guy didn't think to tell him and he didn't get a chance to verify. You know, I had all time in the world. He was doing 10 different jobs at the same time because he was also the scribe. He was doing all the work. He was like a one-man show. He was putting together the get, and he was... there are a lot of parts to writing up a get, and he did this all as a favor to people so that they'd be able to remarry in accordance with halacha.
But they got married, all these women were Jewish?
Yeah, all these women were Jewish, and it was obvious they were going to lead a lifestyle of... they were either going to remarry or they were already remarried, even though halacha prohibited it, you know. So he was doing them a big favor.
They got married
to a ketubah? I don't know if they did a ketubah. They might have gotten a reform rabbi to officiate or something.
So you don't have to do a ketubah to get a get?
To get a get? No. I mean, their first marriage was with a ketubah. Their second marriage was without. They were still legally married to the first husband, halachically. Okay, so we're going to pause here.